You're listening to Studio 360, and I'm Kurt Anderson. When I'm not a radio host, I'm a writer. And when I'm writing, I listen to music. But I can't write listening to music with lyrics or dumb music or, most of the time, music with a lot of drama. So when I discovered Harold Budd at the end of the last century, his music became my go-to workaday soundtrack. People call Harold Budd the godfather of ambient music, an honorific I understand he doesn't love. He plays the piano with a long sustain of notes that hang in the air, as you're hearing. It doesn't insist and grab your attention, but if you do, it transports you. At 77, Budd's career has taken him from bebop jazz to avant-garde minimalism to the existentially pretty music, his phrase, that he's now famous for. He's spent almost 40 years defining a genre through collaborations with artists like Brian Eno and the Cocteau Twins. The first ever career-spanning collection of Harold Budd's music, Wind in Lonely Fences, 1970 to 2011, is out now on All Saints Records, and he is here with me. Harold Budd, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm very glad to be here.
So on my iTunes, where I have many of your albums bought and paid for and in rotation, as I say, your music is classified in eight different genres, and it's seemingly randomly. It's alternative, it's classical, it's electronica dance, new age, rock, unclassifiable, and unknown genre. Does that please you?
I think it's absurd. I think it's hilarious, actually.
Well, and it's interesting, the term that I've read you dislike, ambient, which is so often applied to your music, isn't even one of them that your music was categorized by Apple. Why don't you like your music being called ambient?
My reaction is very visceral and immediate, and maybe it's just being called something,
yeah,
anything that annoys the hell out of me, honestly.
Just having it all be distilled into a single word.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems, yeah.
Well, you know, it. I remember 20, 25 years ago, it used to be New Age.
That must have felt even worse, I would guess.
That was the worst thing that I have. I mean, that was so ludicrous and so awful.
Yeah.
And that I used to go into record stores when there was such a thing,
yeah,
and complain and get me out of New Age.
And would they do so?
Sometimes.
And when you were a kid, when you were young, was there a sort of aha moment where you decided, okay, music is my thing. This has moved me. This is what I want to do.
I can't really explain what happened or what it is, but at some point I fell in love with jazz.
Uh-huh.
And to be honest with you, I think that was largely a product of my rebellion against my family, my background. And I fell in love with black culture, and especially bebop. And that pretty much set me off in this direction of otherness. I'll put it that way. I wasn't angry. You know, I wasn't really pissed off at anybody.
You don't sound angry now.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Believe me, I'm one of the happiest guys in the world.
But when you say otherness, you mean sort of not being part of some mainstream
against
ladder.
The grain.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. I was never career oriented. I was never oriented towards anything except what really struck my fancy. And my fancy was, frankly, artists and what they did.
Your music from your first decade as a composer in the 60s sounds very different from what we who have listened to your music since are used to.
I was looking. I didn't know which way to go. I hadn't found my own voice at all.
Right. And I want to – the new collection has one of those early-ish pieces from 1971 that I want to play a little bit of called The Oak of the Golden Dreams.
Sure.
And that goes on for 18 minutes with very, very few changes or anything
like
that.
It goes on forever, doesn't it?
It does go on forever. What were you trying to do other than in some way, playing the kind of music that the avant-garde thought should be played at the time?
My friend at CalArts, where I was teaching, Charlemagne Palestine, kind of introduced me to the Buchla synthesizer. This is pre-digital.
Right.
And this was my kind of introduction to it, and I wanted to kind of look and see what I could do with that.
And then you stopped writing music in 1970 and then started up again 2 years later, and it was something completely different and more or less what I know of you as doing. It was pretty. What happened? Was there a kind of epiphany that you had?
Yes, there was. And two kinds, negative and positive. The negative one was getting sick and tired of avant-garde music. It was so self-congratulatory and so insular and so boring. And I just didn't want to participate in that world anymore, period. And so I stopped. And luckily, I made a friendship with my closest friend, who was Daniel Entz. And he had coined the term post-avant-garde. And I thought to myself, Jesus Christ, that's exactly what I mean.
And by that, we mean you're not going back to trying to reproduce music of the 19th century, but you're not doing the same thing that had been done in the middle of the 20th.
Exactly correct, yes.
Your best-known collaborator, I venture to say, is Brian Eno, who you met in the 1970s when he was making his clean break from his Roxy music, pop rock world, and you were making this clean break from academic avant-garde minimalist music. I want to play a little bit of the title track from the 1984 album you made with Brian Eno called The Pearl.
Sure.
That is The Pearl from Harold Budd's album of the same name with Brian Eno. How did you two find each other?
This is the story that I'm not really responsible for. But according to Brian, he was given a tape of a live performance of Madrigals of the Rose Angel. And he called me up and he asked me a funny question. He said, is that the kind of thing that you always do? And my answer was, well, yes, it is. And he invited me over to London, my first trip to London. Boy, did that change my life. My God.
Changed it in that the cool kids were suddenly paying attention to you, or changed it musically as well?
Yes. Not musically, no, but changed in terms of actually making a go of it in the real world.
Right.
Yeah.
10 years ago, you announced you were retiring, and you said you had nothing more to say, and you played these two big farewell concerts, and you've released, by my count, about a half a dozen records since then. So that retirement didn't work out.
No, it did not, and I was a fool to have said that or to haven't even thought it.
Yeah.
It was a very low point in my life. I was living alone in Joshua Tree, California, and my marriage was breaking up, and I felt dreadfully sorry for myself.
Mm.
And, that's really juvenile response, but I did. I felt sorry for myself.
Yep.
And my response was to tell everyone, I just kicked the can,
I'm taking the bases and going
that,
home.
Exactly correct. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And what a dumb thing to have done. But I did it. And I'm sorry about that, but...
How long did it take you to sort of say, what did I do? I still want to make music.
Not very long at all. Even when I said it publicly, you know, I thought to myself, God, Jesus Christ, Harold, you're making a real mistake. You know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, you haven't thought this through. What are you yeah. What are you going to do? And the answer was, stop saying that. You know, apologize and get the hell out of there.
And you say you were living in the Joshua Tree Desert.
Yeah.
You grew up some in the Mojave Desert, way out in California.
Yeah.
Both of which make people say, oh, this beautiful, serene music, the desert must inspire him.
No.
But I read no.
No, it doesn't. It does not. In fact, the desert is kind of a tough place to live. You know, it's not,
I mean,
it's very attractive for tourists, but having to live there, man, that's a different bag of tricks altogether.
So if when I listen to your music, I should no longer imagine that it's evoking the desert perfection of Joshua Tree.
Absolutely correct. Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got that.
Cleared that up. Good. And do you intend to keep making records? No other retirements are going to be threatened?
Oh, God, no. Certainly not. No. None of that.
Good. Well, I want to keep having new Harold Budd records to buy, so thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Harold Budd, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Been my pleasure, believe me.
Wind in Lonely Fences, 1970 to 2011, a two-disc compilation of Harold Budd's music, is out now on All Saints Records.